and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello!
Hi, howdy!
This week, we're talking about hacking HIV and gorilla gene therapy. But first, we have a YouTube comment. Now, this one is from our gender dysphoria episode 157. And it says, reasons I think the Sci Guys would go to jail. Jamp either forgot to pay for a Snickers in the gas station or went to pet a stranger's dog. And that stranger was a dramatic Karen that called the police.
Yeah, the dog one.
Dear me. Luke accidentally started a cult that enables emotional abuse and mental distress on babies for science experiments, or he accidentally built a radioactive nuclear weapon. Definitely the first one.
That's very accurate.
It's incredibly accurate.
Whoa.
Corey, cannibalism, or he threw a hot dog at a bigot. Absolutely the first one. I'm not throwing hot dogs at anyone. I'd eat the hot dog. If it's a vegan hot dog, I'm going to eat it. I'm not going to waste it on throwing it at a bigot.
No to food waste, people.
No, I'll throw my words.
Yes.
So, with that done, let's move on to the question. If you're listening, head over to the YouTube channel, get down to the comments, and answer this question. Would you change your genes? Not the ones that you wear, the ones that make you you.
Stop preempting my jokes, please.
Yeah,
I know they're incredibly mundane, but I still want to say them.
So, now we've got the first episode in a small series right now, don't we? It is June, it's Pride Month, so we are celebrating with a month full of Pride-themed episodes. I say Pride-themed episodes, they're LGBT type.
Yeah, they're adjacent.
Yeah, they're LGBT adjacent. They're either about LGBT people, or they have LGBT people in them, or it's something along those lines. Anyway, so we're going to be starting this week off with just the three of us, but every single week for the rest of this month, we are going to be having very special guests. Some scientists, some friends, some returning, some new. It's going to be a good time.
I can't wait to find out who they are.
Oh.
It's definitely not in our calendar.
So, why don't we start the episode, shall we?
Oh, well, yes, please.
Yes.
Okay, so have you heard of Tristan Roberts?
No.
No.
Okay, well, I would have expected Luke to maybe have heard of him. It's kind of a little bit up Luke's alley, some of this stuff. But we'll move on anyway. Diagnosed with HIV in 2011, and he left a very, very well-paying computer programming job because the money and the apartment and all of that sort of stuff, they weren't making him happy. So he had he was basically homeless, but not homeless through circumstances, homeless by choice almost. He was moving between his boyfriend's house, his family and friends' places, and he was basically telling people to just pay him in cryptocurrency when he did his programming work. So he quit his job and he started doing freelance stuff and wanted to be paid in crypto.
I have heard bits about this, actually, yes.
So he's still, I think, on Twitter. And I was going to have him in on this episode, but I saw him posting some stuff, I think, about vaccines. It was verging into that sort of territory where I was like, ooh, I don't know, and I don't necessarily want to risk it. So I didn't ask him to come on this episode, but if you hear this and you'd like to join us for an episode, by all means, please do. So,
just change your views first.
I mean, in the interests of balance, we'd have to have an anti-vaxxer on if we had a vaccine scientist. For example, every single time we've had an accredited scientist on our podcast, we've also had some random person off the street who hates everything that scientist has studied.
Yeah, it's all in the interest of balance, which comes above everything else.
Which is why in every classroom, you have a teacher. And then you have the opposite of a teacher who just tells the children lies.
Spreads misinformation.
The kids have got to figure out which is
which. Takes your knowledge from you.
1 + 1 = 4. Please learn it.
So this guy, Tristan, he's quit his job because it's not fulfilling him. All of that sort of stuff. He's now only being paid in crypto. Obviously, there are some issues with being paid in crypto. I mean, you could probably guess a few of them. Do you want to guess a few of them?
Do you mean issues like issues morally or issues like just the practicalities of it?
I'm talking purely logistically. The logistical issues of trying to be paid in crypto.
Quite well, yeah. And also using that money then is even worse.
Yeah.
Like getting paid in it, maybe. Using it, oh, goodness me. You got some troubles.
Yeah, in the in one of the articles.
Unless you want to buy drugs or guns, there's not a lot of places you can go.
Yeah, but if you buy drugs or guns, you could sell those for real money and then, you know, you're sorted.
That's true. Or if you have guns, you don't even need real money.
Oh, you could just take it. Wow.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
Go to the money collection facility.
So,
life hack.
I wouldn't say so cool was the correct response to that, but sure.
So back to Tristan. There's actually in the article that I was reading, it talks about some issues that he had paying for things specifically because he couldn't convert his Bitcoin into dollars quickly enough. So you kind of get the idea that this guy is, you know, he was arrested, I think, in 2016 during a protest, and he spray painted the word corrupt on FBI headquarters. Or rather, the police said that he spray painted corrupt on FBI
Ooh,
headquarters.
Ooh, hang on. Conspiracy theory?
No. No, I'm just
the police said it and they were right. Is
I'm just covering
saying?
Myself because I've got here that the police said it and I don't want to. Yeah, you know, allegedly he did this. So they cleared his record in exchange for community service, and he was shouting "Occupy the city" as he was being pushed into the police car. So you get the kind of guy that Tristan Roberts is, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a counter-revolutionary.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So now we want to talk a little bit about HIV and AIDS. What do you know about HIV and AIDS?
Well, it's very horrible. It's more livable than it is now, but not a good thing.
Yeah, still. Exactly. So HIV, human immune deficiency virus, it's a virus, obviously. It gets into your body, gets into your DNA, and weakens your immune system. And once you've got a very weakened immune system, that's AIDS, essentially. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So HIV doesn't necessarily lead to AIDS. If you've got HIV, it doesn't mean that you have AIDS, but AIDS is what happens when your immune system is just wrecked from having HIV, which means that you could then die more easily from sort of other diseases. You could
Everything.
Die from pneumonia, your immune system is compromised, and so your defenses are down, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's why it's one of the reasons that it's really just absolutely horrible, because you don't realize the number of things that you come into contact with every single day that your immune system is just making a non-issue for you, you know? So you can't transmit AIDS, obviously. AIDS is non-communicable in that sense.
It's a condition, yeah.
It's a condition, yeah. So you can transmit HIV,
right.
And the HIV virus can sort of give you AIDS, but you can't necessarily give someone AIDS in that sense.
Right.
Yeah?
I think that confused me for a while, because I was like, HIV was used, AIDS was used, and then some people say like HIV/AIDS, and I was like, the same thing. I don't really get it, but okay. AIDS is the condition you get.
Yeah.
AIDS is the condition. HIV is the thing you catch.
So yeah, you can have HIV and be undetectable, and what that means is that the sort of amount of HIV in your body is so low that it's not essentially detectable, which means that you wouldn't then have those knock-on effects of it ravaging your immune system if you caught it early enough. So right now, AIDS is not something that is likely to happen if you're in, say, the UK or the US and you get HIV, because we have treatment for it. Although I say the US, you have to pay for medication there. So in the UK, you're not very likely to get AIDS, even if you get HIV, because we have got treatments for it. And even if you're someone that's at high risk, you can take PrEP, which will sort of protect you from getting HIV, even if you were to sort of, say, have unprotected sex with someone that did have it and was contagious.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And so nowadays, with the treatments that we've got, you can have HIV and not be able to pass it on to other people. Like, be physically incapable of passing it on to other people. If you're on sort of full and proper treatment, it is more or less like living without having HIV. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And if you probably know people that have HIV and you are unaware, you know, because if they choose not to share it with you, you could know someone that has HIV, and you wouldn't necessarily know, because they just need to take it. It's obviously more complex than that, but you can live a more or less normal life just taking medication, you know, regularly.
Yeah.
So you know what HIV is. Do you know how it's transmitted?
Sexually, by blood and bodily fluid.
Yeah, essentially by those kind of bodily fluids. Yeah. You can't transmit it by sweat, urine, or saliva. It doesn't exist outside the body for long, so it's not like, you know, someone can give you HIV by, like,
kissing. Breathing too close to
you. Exactly. Yeah, no, things like that. So as I said, through bodily fluids, but not sweat, urine, or saliva. So the main ways that you could get HIV are through sharing needles and syringes or other things like that with others that have HIV, or by having unprotected sex, anal or vaginal sex, and also oral sex as well. Yeah, I should.
Yeah,
basically having unprotected sex, and also having you could transmit it from mother to child during childbirth.
Really?
Yeah, Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because the infection happens during the childbirth as opposed to the baby is sort of developing with HIV.
Okay, so it could be during pregnancy, childbirth, or breastfeeding.
Right, okay.
I should say, sorry. Yeah, so it's through pregnancy, childbirth, or breastfeeding.
Right.
But you've got to remember that the mother and baby have separate blood supplies.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily 100% going to be transmitted to the baby during pregnancy or, you know, during childbirth or during
It's just a really interesting added bit of clarity there, because I think I'm right in saying as well that when you have sex, the way you get HIV is through having a cut or a small, your bloodstream is involved, as opposed to being like the sex in a sort of in the way that other sexually transmitted diseases are passed. Is that correct?
I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. It makes sense to me, but I haven't heard that specifically.
Okay,
but
ignore me, maybe.
To be fair, so I'm saving all of the really in-depth HIV stuff for a full HIV episode. This is just the necessary background.
I shall back off.
That's totally fine. This is just, well, how about this? we'll put a pin in that, and when we do an HIV episode later on this year, I think, around World AIDS Day, when we do that episode, then we will have an answer for that. Ooh. But until then, nobody knows.
There you go.
So going back to...
Well, someone probably does know.
No one knows. No one knows. Not a single person.
Not until Corey tells us. He's keeping the information for everyone on Earth.
The universe starts existing when Luke started being conscious, and no information starts existing until I tell it to you. It's just how the world
works. The European Union and the UN and the CDC are all waiting to find out.
Corey's email inbox is full just of scientists being like, please tell us.
It's so annoying. So there's those ways. But I said that you can get it through oral sex, but the chance of transmission through oral sex is much lower. Mm. And there's lots of different factors, giving and receiving. There's different risk rates associated with both of those, oral hygiene, all of these sorts of different things. It's less likely, but not impossible.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say, hey, you don't need to worry about oral sex, because just be safe.
It's unlikely, but I feel like it's important to talk about, because a lot of people think you can't get it through oral.
Yeah.
Mm. Like we'll just be safe and, you know, do oral.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And it is safer, but not so much safer that I would say, go ahead and do it, you know? And realistically, if someone has HIV, in the UK, you can get medication for it.
Yeah.
And is it not free? If it's not free, it's at the usual UK prescription.
Yeah, I think PrEP is free now.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it's free. So if we're going to just say that it's free, then yeah, it's free. So in the UK, you could just get it, and you should absolutely take it if you're at increased risk.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to keep you safer.
Yeah.
So that is there for you if you are at increased risk.
Yeah.
Go ahead and take it. So the symptoms of HIV infection, usually you'll have a short flu-like infection 2 to 6 weeks after the infection, which will last for about a week or two.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So within 2 to 6 weeks after being infected, you will have flu-like symptoms lasting for a week or two.
Okay. Yeah.
And once that's over, you could just not experience any symptoms for a long, long time. But your immune system is going to be worn down over time. Obviously, this is without treatment. And that will mean that AIDS will start to appear later on down the line.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not like you're going to get AIDS immediately after HIV infection. It's something that takes a long time to develop. And there's ample time for intervention. Honestly, I mean, the best thing to do if you're infected or at risk of being infected or think that you have been infected is just to see a doctor immediately, and you'll probably be fine.
Okay, yeah.
So the way that HIV works is that it attacks white blood cells, CD4 cells to be specific, and that obviously white blood cells are a very major contributor to your immune system. So by harming those cells, your immune system is weakened. Do you understand that? Are we happy with HIV and AIDS?
That makes sense to me. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I understand that.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Glad you didn't fall into that little trap there that was entirely accidental. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
It sure is.
It's the ad bell.
Well, the ad gods have asked us to promote our Patreon on this episode.
Hell yes.
Thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/SciGuys. You get SciGuys every single week. But if you become a patron, you can get a whole host of other things. What can they get if they join our Patreon?
An extra episode a month.
You can get access to our super secret Patreon podcast, After Dark. Just because SciGuys has ended doesn't mean the conversation has.
That's right. And you can also vote on episode topics, submit episode topics for the vote. And some patrons can just get rid of democracy altogether and tell us exactly what episode they want us to make. You get bonus clips, behind the scenes stuff, lots of cool stuff over on our Patreon. You should definitely go and check it out right now. Patreon.com/SciGuys.
Don't miss it.
I agree.
Let's start the show again. So Tristan Roberts, remember the person I was talking about at the beginning?
Yes.
Mm. Now, he did something very interesting. Can you guess what he might have done based on what we've spoken about thus far in the episode?
I feel like we've talked about two very different things, and I'm not sure how they're going to come together yet.
Yeah, how do you mix HIV and cryptocurrency?
I will tell you, because
you got some fresh
I now realize that we spent quite a bit of time on the cryptocurrency thing, yeah. Which isn't terribly relevant.
Oh, okay.
It was more to give you an idea of the kind of person that Tristan is. So Tristan was not the first person to self-experiment with gene therapy, or even necessarily the first one to do it publicly, but he is the first person to give himself untested gene therapy in search of a cure live on the internet, to my knowledge.
Wow. Live on the internet?
Here is a quote from a Facebook live stream from 2017.
Shut up.
You can't stop it. You can't regulate these things. And he said that to the camera a few minutes before pinching his belly fat and plunging a syringe into its tissue. But you can create an environment where there's transparency. This was 5 years ago. As
well,
sort of time,
I mean, you can
time
regulate
recording
things. Is he a bit of an anarchist?
He's, gosh.
I think his point was that he made the treatment himself at home, right?
He didn't make it himself at home. We'll get into right. the story, but the idea is that it's untested gene therapy.
Okay.
That
yes.
he is doing on himself without the sort of supervision of, I mean, not necessarily without the supervision of doctors, but not under the sort of FDA under FDA approval or the supervision of any sort of governmental body, if that makes sense.
Right.
So he injected himself when he was 27, and he was diagnosed with HIV around 2011, but then 2 years prior to the live stream, he'd stopped treating it by normal medical means. He moved on to then trying to treat it via healthy eating and other natural means, in part because of the side
like
effects.
Like Steve Jobs.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like that's...
Didn't work, unfortunately.
Really? I thought Steve Jobs made a full recovery and he's still kicking.
That's what I'd heard.
He shapeshifted into Tim Cook.
Did that fruitarian thing not work?
Tim Apple, you'll find.
It did not work. Yes, it's very sad.
Well, actually, it was just a real commitment to the company. He was only eating
apples.
Stop.
So as I said, he moved on to trying to deal with it via healthy eating and other natural means. I love the word natural, and I never have any problems with it, and I won't be talking about it later in this episode. So he was trying to treat it naturally because of the side effects of the treatment, and then also because there was a slight insurance issue, which meant that it was hard for him to get his medication. And
America!
Yeah, sorry. It's a very American problem, honestly. Sometimes I see things about the American healthcare system, and it shocks me. Like, when I was planning to go to America, and I was like, oh, I need to get my insurance for going away, because what if I get injured, you know? The insurance is very cheap, it's very good,
yeah.
You know, it's great, fantastic. The amount that they will pay in medical bills goes up to an obscene amount.
Really?
Yeah, stupid,
like
15
amount. Million.
Yeah, yeah, millions for this was for millions for an insurance policy that was maybe about £50 one payment.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, because American healthcare treatments are
I knew it was expensive.
They're stupid expensive. So they kind of, the way that it kind of works, and I'm going to butcher this slightly, is that they expect that insurance companies are going to be paying. So they set a price that's sort of agreed upon, and the insurance company kind of gets a discount. But if you're an individual sort of person paying it, they still present you with the really inflated costs that they're not expecting anyone to pay. They just have the inflated costs so that they could then have a discount for the insurance people. And if you ask or say, if you ask for them to send you your bill or say, hey, what are all of these things, query them, usually a ton of the costs will just disappear or become way smaller. I'm kind of butchering this. That's not exactly
it's literally not, that though
it's not exactly how the healthcare system works over there necessarily. it's not a perfect explanation, but that is the gist of it. Yeah. Essentially, costs are artificially inflated because of deals between insurance companies and hospitals, and if you pay for it yourself, you're paying more than you need to, and they will just remove charges if you ask what they are.
Yeah,
it's not mad. Even ask for them to be removed, just ask what they are,
yeah,
and they will remove some charges.
I've seen a lot of TikToks of people being like, just ask for an itemized bill after your hospital stay or whatever, and you'll get a lot off, like a lot of money will just disappear for some reason. It's crazy.
Horrifying. Honestly, just dystopia vibes. So this company then comes along, Biomedical Assurance. It's a biotech company, and they needed people that were willing to test treatments on themselves so that they could then publish the results free of charge online, which is interesting because private companies don't really do that necessarily. You don't get free information online usually about human trials for treatments that companies are wanting to try out. You know, I mean, you could find the information on trials often, but not this easily. That's kind of the change that they wanted to make. They wanted it to be free for everyone to see.
Yeah.
Plus, so much research is behind a paywall then and inaccessible to anyone that isn't in academia or a private firm. And changing that is massive. Because, to be honest, when I access a lot of things that I access for this podcast, they're not necessarily going to be available to the people that are listening to the podcast unless they have, honestly, hundreds and thousands of pounds just to spend on accessing them. If you're going to pay for individual access to individual articles, which can easily be £50 just for one article.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you never hit a paywall?
Just email the person who wrote it. No, I know. Yeah, of course, I've seen it. But just email the person who wrote it. They'll send you it in an email.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Absolutely. This is something I wanted to talk about.
Because they don't get any of the money.
Well, they don't. It goes to the journal. This will come back later this month. I'm fairly sure. If you want anything from a scientist, just email them.
Really?
They like it.
Yeah.
Most of them love it. Like, they want you to reach out and say, hey, I'm looking to do some work on X. Could I perhaps see your paper on this? And they'll just send it to you. They might even send you some extra information. If you want to know something about someone's lab, or you want to know if you could work with them, you know, as an intern or, you know, for a small job or whatever, email them.
Yeah.
Scientists love that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever emailed a scientist to say, hey, I'm interested in this. And they've given me a negative response.
Yeah.
And I've emailed a few.
I guess you assume that's not an option because you expect some of the paywall to go towards the scientists. No. You'd expect, but no. I guess not.
No. Absolutely not.
You'd expect it if you were a fool.
If you were, no, I'm a fool.
So I've got a couple of quotes here. This one comes from Gizmodo. This is from 2017. Roberts volunteered himself as the first test subject. He would inject himself with a gene called N6, intended to spur his body to produce an antibody that would fight HIV, which research from the National Institute of Health last fall had identified as extremely good at neutralizing the vast majority of HIV strains in the lab, thus theoretically stopping it from infecting human cells and destroying the body's immune system. The antibody was found to be produced naturally by a patient who was HIV positive but developed an immunity to it. A vaccine using a different antibody to fight HIV is currently in phase 2 clinical trials. So, the idea here was that they take this gene and put it into the man's body. And ideally, it would then get into his DNA, and his body would start producing the antibody from that gene. So genes, as you should remember, are just the blueprints for proteins, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah? And a gene is just instructions to make a protein, and if you give a body a gene, it will make that protein. It gets very complex.
Yes.
Bodies are very, 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 very complex, just generally.
I would just like to check something. So, when you're talking about this, the thing he's injecting, is this sort of akin to a virus in that it is getting his cells of his body to make this protein? Or is it editing his genome so that the cells produce the protein because they think that's what the genome is?
Editing his genome, I believe. So this is this is gene therapy.
Because, which is really cool.
Yeah, well, you would need it to be gene therapy to have a continued sort of immunity to HIV
rather than just a
one-time sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. So then you wouldn't even be able to re-get it.
Yeah. So the idea here is that I'll just go through kind of the whole story of what they did. What they did was they found a person who and when I say they, scientists working at the National Institute of Health, I believe, they had found a person who was HIV positive, but had basically become immune to HIV. Mm. And upon investigating, they found that that person was producing this specific antibody. Now, an antibody, essentially, it's a part of your immune system. It's just very specific in attacking a specific thing. It attacks one specific sort of thing, and that's what its job is.
Yeah.
We've spoken about antibodies before, but that's a brief overview.
Yeah.
So they've started producing this antibody that makes them immune to HIV. If you just take the gene for this antibody and put it into someone else, they'll start making the antibody, and ideally, then it will make that person immune to HIV as well. So, here is another quote. I'm definitely not 100% comfortable. This is novel, but there was enough scientific literature, and I trusted enough in the ethos of the research. In the worst case scenario, I understand I could just have my belly fat liposuctioned out and would be fine. Because it's localized gene therapy. It's just in his belly fat.
Okay.
Yeah?
Right.
So it's not.
This is the plot to 28 Weeks Later, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's also the plot to The Last of Us, I think.
That was mushrooms, wasn't it? Fungi.
I thought Ellie's immune to the thing.
Oh yeah.
That's part of the plot. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a part of, I think, most of those kinds of zombie films, right?
It was briefly in The Walking Dead as well, that story. Of course, line, although it doesn't go the way you expect.
Oh, does it not?
No, it doesn't.
Oh wow, I can't wait to watch The Walking Dead on Disney Plus and find
the zombies become immune to the humans trying to kill the zombies.
Oh wow. Mm. That's so
smart.
And then
they take over the world.
So yeah. Or the person's lying about being immune.
Oh no. Oh, that's also the plot of X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
God, these screenwriters need to get some originality, don't they?
But it's just one screenwriter for all of them. It's like, I got a winning formula here. They'll never know.
So, a little fake mustache.
So what do you think the results of this, let's say, experiment were?
Well, I hope they were very positive.
I hope so also.
I'm hoping that. I'm just trying to think, does the localized thing affect how the results turn out? I'm not sure. Or is it localized as in it just...
Well, they won't become immune, will they? Because it's localized.
Positive, I hope.
I'll tell you, well, it was positive, Jamp.
Okay.
Very, very good. So first, the skin on his back broke out in large red bumps. Oh. He figured he was bitten by mosquitoes, but couldn't be sure. Then he was felled for 4 days by a strange feverish feeling, a loss of appetite, and gastrointestinal issues. I'm freaking terrified it might be the plasmid, he said. I'm 98% certain this is fine, but there's still this 2% that's like, this could be something terrible. Now, that's a quote from a BBC article written in 2017. And the plasmid he's referring to, a plasmid is a little ring of DNA that we get from, a little ring of sort of genetic information that we get from bacteria, and it's just how they transfer genetic information between bacteria.
Okay.
It's just a vector essentially for putting genes into something else.
Right.
So that's what we put the gene in, and then we put it into him. I say we. That's what he did. Yeah, I didn't do.
We
nothing.
Did it.
No, I didn't do anything.
Yeah. No.
And then those symptoms that I was just talking about, those alleviated after a few days, and I've now got a quote from the guy that discovered the N6 antibody, Mark Connors. So the N6 antibody, remember, is the one that is produced by the person that became immune to HIV. So Mark Connors has said, while N6 is more versatile than any other HIV antibody previously discovered, Connors said it can't wipe out the virus all on its own, and therefore is a debate raging in the field about whether or not antibodies alone will ever be able to cure the virus. HIV's protein envelope constantly mutates, shifting into forms that prevent our antibodies from binding to and neutralizing it. As potent as N6 is, HIV can still develop a resistance to it, making it a poor candidate as a monotherapy or standalone treatment. Mm. Yeah. So it didn't really work, but it's kind of the concept of it is what I find more interesting, right? Okay. Not necessarily the very specific treating HIV with this one specific antibody. The idea of gene therapy being done by private citizens, essentially. So this company was not working outside of the law, but it was a bit iffy, okay? It's kind of working in, not the FDA's blind spot, but the FDA is going to turn a blind eye to what you're doing because the FDA don't super care necessarily about self-experimentation. They're not fond of it. They don't like it.
Right.
If you hear them ever talk about it, sort of with public statements, it's always, we don't like that. It's a no-no from us.
Mm.
But they're not going to do a whole lot to crack down unless it's going to present a danger to many other people, you know?
Okay.
You know, like a whole zombie situation.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense, right? Ooh. But they're not...
I think it's fine to crack down.
Yeah, but this man is... This man didn't go... It's not like this man went to jail for sort of injecting himself with this antibody, mm-hmm. you know, even though the FDA... It's not FDA approved. They wouldn't really let you give it to anyone else. He chose to do it to himself. I mean, we've got a long history of self-experimentation on the on this podcast.
Yes, we do.
We do. We started off with some of it, didn't we?
Very first episode.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say, like, he's not going to go to jail for injecting this into himself. He chose to do it. But equally, somebody else had to choose. He didn't make it himself. It's not like... It's kind of a situation that sounds like I'm just going to leave this antibody on the desk and don't you go putting in your body. And he goes, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this, I think a lot of the people in the company stayed anonymous, and there's not much information about the company that did it online, so it seemed a little bit shady. But I don't think it is all that shady. I think it is genuinely just some people that are almost anarchist in that aspect in regards to sort of therapies, where they want to take it away from, I guess, Big Pharma or all the red tape of the FDA and make all this information available to anyone and everyone. And I respect that. I understand that. I think that's an awesome cause to get behind, giving people more access to data. The only issue is that giving people more access to data without giving them the tools to understand that data is almost more dangerous than not giving them the data at all.
Potentially problematic.
It sounds kind of like the inside sort of story of Elon Musk trying to take over Twitter, where it's like he goes, oh, I'm just going to have no moderation. And then he starts getting involved and looking into Twitter, and suddenly he's like, oh, a lot of these rules are there for a reason.
No way.
I see. And so, yes, it might be annoying. There's all that red tape and all those kind of things. But it's also like some of that red tape might be because some really, really bad things happened. And then they put the red tape so that it never happens again.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Some of it will be stupid bureaucracy. But some of it will be like, oh, wait, let's never let that happen again. Please. Yeah.
This is difficult because I feel like I fall in the middle of the people involved in this. You know, I don't feel like it is necessarily safe for any and everyone to make a decision for themselves to inject themselves with some untested vaccine. Because, well, ultimately, one, it can affect other people. And two, I don't like when people prey on less educated people.
And people who are in a situation where they might be desperate as well.
Yeah,
And desperation. I feel like this would be rife for that.
Yeah.
Right. It's especially with companies looking to make money by having people self-experiment, you know, the gig economy, but for scientific research.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not essentially that's not exactly what they want to do, though. It's essentially just making it available to everyone. That you get that sort of idea. The same sort of vibe that people that talk about decentralizing currency with crypto. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind
of
vibe.
Or like having a 3D printer at home to make your own things.
Yeah.
And the design is online for free.
Yeah.
But that also enables people to print their own guns, which is not very good.
No.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, essentially. I've got another quote here. This is from the Gizmodo article. A company pushing such self-administration of an experimental compound is another story, he told me. My eyebrows raised at seeing the CEO of a company that provides the compound to be used for research use only starts the presentation by saying, "We do not advise that anyone watching this video do what is about to be done here." At the same time, he is presiding over a taping for internet distribution of a video about just that. So the way that they're kind of getting away with it is by selling it for research use only, because you're allowed to make a vaccine and sell it for research use. If someone uses that to research on themselves, I feel like they're trying to get around it. It's just they're basically operating under the knowledge that the FDA is probably going to leave them alone.
Yeah,
because they're not. It's they're doing it with consent of people. You know, it's
sort of informed consent. There may well be people in the FDA who kind of want to turn a blind eye to this stuff because it might get results quicker. But they obviously, being the FDA, could never sanction such a experiment.
Yeah.
But they might be like, well, if people want to do that to themselves, this will make things happen quicker.
Well, they could sanction it, though. That sort of experiment is fine. That, like, honestly, these sorts of experiments are fine. The issue is just making sure that we aren't wasting... There's two main issues, right, when it comes to producing a vaccine, which is what this is. It would kind of be an HIV, be kind of like an HIV vaccine, or realistically it's an HIV treatment, but you could use it as an HIV vaccine.
Yeah.
The issue when it comes to producing,
you don't
these,
have to have HIV to put it
exactly,
in you.
Exactly. Yeah. You can just have the thing that, absolutely. I mean, it is literally a vaccine in that it's a bit more direct in that sense.
Yeah.
Vaccines cause your body to produce an immune response to a thing, right? A vaccine will there's different types of vaccines, obviously. Mm. We've had RNA vaccines, all of these sort of things. The RNA vaccines that we've looked at, they give your body some RNA that temporarily makes the sort of a sort of protein from the offending virus or, you know, illness or whatever. Yeah.
Mm.
And your body then creates an immune response to that. And so it will have antibodies for that specific part of that virus, which will then mean that you are immune to the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Other sort of vaccines can have dead or sort of inactivated or weakened forms of the sort of virus. And you put those into your body and it's not going to pose a threat to your body, but your body is threatened anyway and produces an immune response, which then makes it able to take on the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you're kind of skipping the natural step of that. And instead of making your body produce its own antibodies, you're just cutting out the middleman and putting the antibody gene into your body regardless. Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, it's like an antibiotic for a virus.
Kind of.
Or like making your body make an antibiotic.
Well, no. It's
for a virus.
So remember that your body is doing exactly the same thing it would normally do. Mm. It's just that instead of getting your body to make an antibody, sort of make up the recipe for an antibody itself, let's say, you're giving it the recipe.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Make this one. I promise it's good.
Yeah.
Normal vaccines are like giving the body like a training simulation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like like in the Matrix, where you download how to fight jiu-jitsu into the brain of somebody.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's such a perfect way of sort of describing it. Because it's interesting to me, because it's a vaccine almost, but it's just cutting out the middleman and saying to your body, hey, you don't need to do an immune response. Or you got it for you. I got all the stuff you need right here. Better than you could do it. So
cool.
That's kind of how that would work. But the issue is that they could absolutely sanction this.
Mm.
I'm fairly sure. You know, gene therapy is something that they were teaching it to us back in school as a potential for the future. It's not something that is entirely impossible for us to pursue. But the issue is that there's lots of red tape before that, and a lot of it makes sense. So the two main issues when it comes to producing a sort of vaccine or any sort of medicine like that, anything in that sort of vein, you know, any sort of gene therapy, let's say. The issue is that it costs a lot of money, and each step you want to make sure that you're not going to invest a ton of money into the next step only for it to fall through. And to be honest, a lot of them fall through. So many of them fall through. And the reason that you don't go straight to human trials and you do a lot of animal trials and all these other things first, and then you step onto human trials and you're very careful and you do it with many people, all that sort of thing, is because of, I guess, a number of reasons. One, you want to make sure it's safe for humans. You don't want to do a human trial and then kill some people by accident. That's real bad. You don't want to do a human trial and find out that it doesn't just make the humans worse, but it also makes them, it also affects others, right? You don't want to have some kind of contagion on your hands. You don't want to basically harm people. So by testing on animals before that, you can get an idea of how what you're working on works and if what you're working on works.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you move on to the next step, then there's more sort of safety protocols each sort of time to make sure that every time you take a step forwards, you're not going to do something horrific.
Yes.
And we're very, very careful about doing human trials now. I mean, we kind of have to be. We've spoken so many times on the podcast about sort of bad things that have come of rushing to human trials without fully understanding something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's necessarily, I don't know if the FDA, I mean, if there are sort of people at the FDA that are making these decisions, if they would sort of think, yeah, this is a good thing for us because we want to get this done, but there's so much red tape. Because I feel like a lot of that sort of work is to make sure that they're not going to waste money, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose with this, if there were other tests done beforehand, they might, you know, obviously there's not necessarily too much money that's gone into making this and that's been wasted on this one project necessarily. Mm. But I don't know if they're doing something so amazing that going outside of sort of traditional sort of rules is worth it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I'm not totally sure.
Too much risk involved.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, sure, there's this one guy that is... who seems to be educated on what he's taking and genuinely wants to and isn't in a place of desperation, you know, given his circumstances. Yeah. He had that really, really comfortable job, which yeah. he works in sort of computing and could likely get another well-paying job and health insurance and, you know, pay for all of this medication. Mm. But what about someone else who's maybe less in the know about it, who doesn't quite understand things as well, who is maybe a little bit more desperate, who is willing to risk things a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just feels... It feels like it could be, I guess, exploited really easily. Yeah. And that's why we have some laws in place to stop people from exploiting other people. And I feel like trying to go outside of those, it might be a little bit dangerous. I don't know if you can trust a company to decide whether or not someone is fit to, I guess, use an experimental treatment.
Yeah.
So if you're worried about this sort of gene technology affecting children, as in if you change someone's genes and they have kids, that might be dangerous, because what if it changes the kids? It's not affecting the germline cells, it's not affecting the cells that make kids, so it's fine. Oh, don't worry about fine. It yeah yeah
it's just his tummy cells.
Nothing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly, you'll be fine.
As far as we know, tummy cells is not involved in babies.
Yeah.
So I've told you a little bit about Tristan Roberts. I want to tell you a little bit about Aaron Trawick. So Aaron Trawick was the CEO of Ascendance Biomedical, which is the company that produced this gene therapy, and he's one of the people who was on the live stream and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And he actually died at 28, and there were so many stories about this, because he died in a spa, and they were kind of confused as to sort of why, what had gone on.
Hmm.
But it was this massive sort of shift, apparently. There's so many articles. I think there's one called Death of a Biohacker, and they bring up questions about where this whole sort of biohacking thing is going to go following his death. So what they talk about is the fact that Ascendance Biomedical and these other sort of biohacking companies, they then sort of rely on testing products on themselves, essentially. That's what it says. So I literally have here, to walk around regulators, Ascendance and other biohackers typically rely on testing products on themselves. Self-experimentation, although strongly discouraged by agencies like the FDA, makes it difficult for regulators to intervene. The rules that govern drug development simply aren't written to oversee what an individual might do to themselves. So, you know, this guy who was at the forefront of this, you know, he was on that live stream in February of 2018. He injected into his left thigh herpes treatment that his company had developed,
oh,
an
wow.
experimental one. And, you know, he's almost a sort of DIY biologist, if that makes sense. Again, this is what the article, what the articles that I've read are referring to him as. And he was sort of this just... He was just pushing forwards regardless, you know, in the sort of front of biohacking. And I just kind of wanted to mention that before we get into the topic of biohacking, because I just think it's interesting to see the sort of view of the people that do this. Because I feel like if you say biohacker, you kind of get an image of the kind of person that would do it, right?
Yeah.
What kind of image are you getting?
I get a kind of idea of like, well... This sort of cyberpunk sort of era of the internet, where you had mm-hmm. these kind of anarchist guys, because they often usually were guys, sort of going around the internet and sort of with an anarchist view. They don't like governments, and they think the internet is like going to be this new free place where everybody can be exactly who they want to be, and the governments are not involved. And it was this dream, which I think part of that sort of era led to an organization called the Electronic Frontier Foundation, mm-hmm. I think it's called, which kind of fights for rights and like people's rights on the internet. Mm. So that's who I get. It's kind of like this cyberpunk kind of thing.
Mm.
Definitely anarchist as well.
Yeah.
Got in a leather jacket with shades for some reason.
I think you're hitting on a lot of the right sort of, well, not the right sort of points, the points that I really agree with. And the right points for this kind of episode is what I'm talking about. Because, yeah, I agree. The anarchy sort of runs through it. I mean, I should sort of describe what anarchism is, because I feel like people have a...
Yeah, we've talked about it a few times now this episode.
Yeah, people have a view of it that I think is less than accurate. I mean, do you want to give it a go? What people usually view anarchy as?
People really view it as. Yeah. Like mohawks and being punk and just doing what
that's exactly
you want,
that's exactly what I just described.
Being lazy and
yeah, like punk music,
oh, no,
hating
not being
authority.
Lazy.
But a lot of people, a lot of people will be like, oh, it's just this lazy mindset of, you know, being unemployed and
oh, really?
We wanted to do what you want. Yeah.
Like, I think like wild and crazy and doesn't want to work, you know, doesn't want to put in the effort to have a sort of day job, but wants to just tear.
That sounds like propaganda to me.
This is what people would view it as. And, you know, when people say, oh, it's anarchy, and what they say, what they mean when they say it's anarchy is that it's gone crazy, it's gone wild, everything was all over the place.
People
like,
are running amok.
And, like burning bins and like broken, like
like breaking things, smashing things. Anarchism. Yeah. And I will read out the definition of anarchism from the Oxford Dictionary. Belief in the abolition of all government and the organization of society on a voluntary, cooperative basis without recourse to force or compulsion. It's not what you've been taught it is. This is something I've been realizing a lot more recently, is that we are taught very incorrect things about political systems and beliefs that are maybe somewhat, I guess,
counter
to the norm. The ones that are maybe that could present a threat to the society that we currently live in.
Yes.
So, I mean, the way that Americans understand communism is genuinely hilarious.
It's when you're waiting in line for bread.
Communism is when government do.
Yeah,
and
no iPhone.
Socialism is when no iPhone and government do.
Yes,
but what bothers me is that I've spoken about capitalism elsewhere, you know, on the internet, and almost times, almost every single time without fail, whenever I mention it, I have people in my comments and in my replies and in my DMs that know less about capitalism than I do.
Yes,
and they also know less about, say, socialism and communism than I do.
Yes,
but they are adamantly insulting the things that I've said, because I'm challenging the status quo, I'm challenging the norm, and they've been taught that capitalism is something that it isn't. They genuinely do not understand what makes capitalism capitalism.
Yes,
it's the fact is that some Americans have thought that I, a Scottish person living in Britain, I'm living in a socialist country because we have healthcare.
You have the NHS.
I literally
so
had
socialist.
This conversation yesterday. I had this conversation with I'm currently at Cannes Film Festival, and I had a conversation with an American about. She was like, "I wouldn't want to pay your taxes, the taxes you pay." And I was like, "You know, America spends more per person on healthcare than every other developed country."
Do you know what the response to that is usually?
But we have better healthcare. And that's true. They do have better healthcare in many... Well, if you can afford it and if you have insurance, some of your treatment is better. Like, you might be more likely to have tests that our NHS might deem unnecessary, which might pick up on something which we otherwise wouldn't have got, and you might have shorter wait times. But at the same time, the guy I was with who was having this conversation with us said, I was in A&E in America and I had to wait 5 hours to be seen. And that's in a privatized system, which is exactly like what the wait times are like in England. So.
Yeah, what?
So what Americans often say about our healthcare system is that actually America subsidizes every other country's healthcare system by doing the research, XYZ. It's not as true as what they think. They say that American healthcare is on average better, but I'm pretty sure for the amount that they spend to the sort of how good their healthcare is, it doesn't match up. I'm looking here, and I think America spends 16.9% of their GDP, and the average that I'm looking at here is 8.8. So they're spending over roughly twice
and
the
average.
And
they have a lower average life expectancy than many Western countries.
Gosh. Yeah. I'll leave the link to what I'm looking at in the description here. But the point is that Americans will often say that their healthcare system is better when it's really just not. In almost every metric, it is falling behind many other countries in their healthcare system. And we've got incredibly long wait times here. But also in the UK, you could go private if you want.
Yeah.
You could go private if you want.
It also exists here.
Yeah.
You have the option.
Yeah.
You can do both. And when it comes to, I don't want to pay your taxes, Americans pay stupid amounts of tax on stupid things, you know?
Well, this lady I was talking to thought that we all paid a 50% tax rate.
Ugh, Christ.
She thought that everybody in England paid 50% tax rate. And when I said, well, actually, we don't pay any tax on the first £12,000, which you guys pay from $1, I think.
Yeah.
And then even the richest people don't pay a 50% tax rate, not even a 50% effective tax rate. Like, I don't think it's possible to pay a 50% tax rate in the UK.
So bringing it back to the sort of biohacking thing, it kind of makes sense as to why anarchists would be maybe more leaning towards the idea of biohacking.
Yeah.
And let's talk about this really briefly, because this isn't the only instance of biohacking, you know, publicly. So there's some quotes here I've got from Uzziah Zahner, who is the chief executive of a company that sells do-it-yourself gene engineering kits. And he has given himself gene therapies in front of live audiences and whatnot. So his comment on Ascendance and Tristan Roberts' whole thing was no comment, because he said they have very little idea what they are doing. So it's not necessarily the best example of this sort of thing, but it is an example of it. I think it can be done well. I think with people that are well-informed and, you know, are not in a position where they're being coerced or, you know, would be convinced to do something that is maybe not necessarily... That's a little bit more risky, you know? I think it's fine if someone were to do that, if they're in that sort of comfortable position. If a billionaire were to do it,
yeah,
sure, fine, experiment on yourself. I don't care. If you grow like, I don't know, like ant... antennae, that's fine by me. Jeff Bezos with like little antennae. Yeah,
we can spot you easier.
Exactly.
Yeah, take his money.
Yeah, have a better excuse to shoot him off into space. So I'll just read out these quotes that I've got here. So Brian Hanley, a microbiologist who gave himself a gene therapy designed to increase his stamina and lifespan, hates being called a biohacker. While he sees little problem with scientists experimenting on themselves, he fears that biohackers who promote self-experimentation will encourage total amateurs to take risks they don't understand. That's kind of my point on this here, and here's a quote from him. They could give themselves a significant issue, potentially including dying from it. The biggest danger is you could infect yourself with something. And then we've got more here from George Church, who's a pioneer in genome sequencing, who has become a de facto sounding board for people interested in self-experimentation, and said that while he always recommends caution, clinical trials, and the involvement of physicians, sometimes startling results can come from a single patient. He pointed to the example of Barry Marshall, who is...
Oh, from episode one.
Yeah.
He gave himself... what was it? Something to do with stomach ulcers. Mm-hmm. Was it a bacteria that was meant to help his stomach ulcers?
So he gave himself... he wanted to prove that stomach ulcers were caused by, I think, a bacterial infection. So he swallowed the bacteria, waited till he got good and ulcery, and then gave himself antibiotics, and he was fine.
Yeah, he gave himself the ulcers initially. Yeah,
exactly. And that was the example that he drew to. And you know, George Church has said it was dramatic enough that it led to his Nobel Prize. Anything is possible. Now, I don't think that's necessarily the best example, because Barry Marshall was a doctor, and he had good reason to believe that this was causing the ulcers. There was so much difficulty in proving this, because the people that were making money from the ulcer treatment that didn't actually get rid of the ulcers, didn't necessarily want funding to go to that, and it was a funding issue more than anything. The science, the basis was there, it was sound. The man knew what he was doing, he knew the risk, and he was doing it to himself. I don't think this is necessarily the same as what's going on with the Tristan Roberts case, you know, wherein this guy he's a computer guy. He's not a biologist. He doesn't necessarily understand this whole thing. What he understands of it is likely going to come from the people who are trying to get him to give it to himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just want to briefly talk about some self-experimentation laws. So there aren't really any... The FDA doesn't really intervene when people do experiments on themselves. They just discourage self-experimentation. They strongly advise against it. Because for obvious reasons. And... This is a quote from Gizmodo, from Eleanor Powells, who is a science policy expert at the Wilson Center. So she said that the video from, you know, the Facebook live stream was frightening and fascinating. Whilst not strictly illegal, she was worried that down the line, this kind of self-experimentation promoted in the live stream could have a dangerous ripple effect. How could other users modify the self-experimentation down the line at their risks? Could vulnerable populations like children or users with no knowledge or skills be harmed through such self-experimentation? Who is liable? Who is ethically responsible? You know, so that's the kind of issue that I've got there, you know, and it's comforting that it aligns with the sort of experts in this. And I understand where the sort of biohackers are coming from on it. I understand wanting to get out of sort of get rid of red tape and, you know, get rid of bureaucracy and not necessarily be sort of beholden to the interests of the companies that are funding said research or removing funding from said research. I understand that entirely. I just I don't think science education is at the point where people can be making informed decisions on this themselves. And I don't think that our economy and the, you know, our sort of social systems are in a place wherein people can be making informed decisions on this themselves that aren't going to be influenced by external factors.
Yeah.
I don't feel like self-experimentation should be illegal. I think that generally you should be able to do kind of what you like when it's your body, but you shouldn't be able to sell somebody something that they can use for self-experimentation. So if you're a scientist and you want to create something and then you want to test it on yourself, I feel like as long as you're mentally sound, you should be allowed to do that. But I definitely don't think that companies should be able to sell for research purposes stuff to just anyone. I feel like that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because you're right, it could result in a gig economy where companies can sell for research purposes and then they can just pay people measly amounts of money to self-experiment and collect the data. Weird.
I think one of the main things that they're talking about that is really good is having open data, the data being available to everyone. And I think that's something that we should be moving more towards. I mean, the data is available to an extent. Obviously, it's behind paywalls. If you work in academia or in sort of a private firm, it's not necessarily behind a paywall because you're able to access it. But for any independent, or if you don't have access to a certain thing, it's a massive wall. It's a paywall. So I understand. I think one thing that we could do really to improve things, and we spoke about this, I think, on SciGuys Live, our monthly live show, which you should definitely check out. The end of this month, we're doing a themed episode that will be very fun. So on SciGuys Live, I did a story about all of these models for a certain virus and trying, you know, people were building to try and understand, essentially to try and predict whether people who were infected with this certain virus would have severe symptoms or not. And the main issue that experts had pointed to with these models, because none of the models worked, the main issue was that all of these different research teams were working on them separately. But they were making things that were very similar to each other, and they could have ironed out a lot of the kinks if they'd worked together. I think a more collaborative aspect in science, a sort of collaborative atmosphere in science would be better. I think more open data would be better. But unfortunately, in the financial system, or economic system rather, that we live under, we are not incentivized to collaborate in those cases. We're often incentivized to compete.
Yes.
The funniest part of all of that, especially when you've got like these online journals where you have to, where you can't get access to the information, is that the internet was literally created for scientists to share their data with each other.
Yep.
Like, that's why all of this exists.
Yep.
Like, that is just, that's just so weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, look, to kind of wrap all of this up, you know, my sort of views on this and all of that, I think that self-experimentation is perfectly fine, so long as a few, I guess, stipulations are met. One, you are informed and are giving your consent, and I mean informed. Two, there aren't any external factors that are pressuring you into taking, you know, into experimenting on yourself. And three, there is as low a chance as is possible and feasible, like a genuinely almost zero chance of this going in such a way that it affects other people. So if you're going to give your, if you're going to sort of try and give yourself, make a vaccine, for example, from a communicable, for a communicable disease, right? For a disease that you can give to other people. You better be bloody sure that you're not going to accidentally give yourself a live version of that, I guess, sort of, you know, the give virus. You a live version of the, a live version of that virus or bacteria or whatever, and then spread another, spread something about it.
Yeah.
But the likelihood of that happening is, I think, quite low. But, you know, there is, this is what's frustrating, because there are genuine benefits to there being red tape and sort of rules and regulations around some things. But that can also then, sort of make the timeline just hugely long.
Yeah.
And it can cause difficulties. Like, the unnecessary bureaucracy can suck. And it can also incentivize people to not collaborate and work together or share their knowledge or information or work. But on the other hand, complete lack of regulation could result in a lot of dangers in this, especially in the society that we live in, right? It's just, it could be really, really bad, because you've got people who are focusing on a profit or who are focusing on producing this thing, and they're probably going to want to take more risks for it.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to mislead someone if you are taking some layperson off the street. So let's say you're working on gene therapy for cancer and you take some person off the street, right? Let's say you take Barry off the street. He's 47, right? He's got his GCSEs. He's been working, I don't know, he's been working in a bar for, you know, since he's been 17. He runs the bar, right? Nice guy. Lovely guy, got a family, a smart guy, has never studied science since he was 16 years old. Who is going to be explaining this to him? Is it the people from the company that are going to be explaining it to him? Because it's in their interest to tell him all the good stuff and downplay the risks.
Who's
to say if he'll even actually understand the risks? You know? Because it's just... Ugh. So you know, he's been like diagnosed with like, you know, stage whatever cancer. He can't afford to pay for the treatment. He's got his family, all of that sort of stuff. He doesn't want to cost them all that money.
Yeah,
he's gonna go with this company, isn't he?
You'll risk it. If you're desperate, you'll risk your life. It's it's crazy what people will do.
And it's just it's worrisome that it could open up that possibility. So biohacking, I don't think is inherently bad, but I think it's something that is maybe potentially more dangerous than people sort of give it credit for.
Yes.
Okay, so that is this week's episode, the first week of Pride Month, which is pretty bloody cool. I've got something very fun for you.
Oh, what is it?
It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Biohacking edition.
Well, that's very good. So the quick fire quiz is going to be the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Jemp?
A sneaky little biohack. Just one.
Yay. What is your buzzer, Luke? Very good.
It's the sound of me injecting it into my tummy.
Oh.
Be more of an... Oh.
Oh, okay. That's my buzzer. Oh.
That sounds a little bit more enjoyable.
You're enjoying it too much there.
Okay, sorry. Ow.
Jam, what's your buzzer? What is that?
Me hacking into my bio.
Okay, so my question for you this week is, what does AIDS stand for?
Ow.
Oh, Luke.
Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome.
Yes, you are right. AIDS stands for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. Well done, Luke. You win a little biohack. What are you going to do? What are you going to change?
Yay! I will make myself... I will make myself smell like whatever would make dogs come up to me and say hi all day.
A butthole. A dog's butthole.
Yeah, probably something really bad.
There like we go. Poo. Luke smells like a dog. No longer does Luke smell like off milk. Luke now smells like a stinky dog butthole.
Yay.
Upgraded from milk to poo.
Well, that is it for this week's episode. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Rosa Rodriguez and Danito. And thank you for listening. You can find the Who references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday and why not leave us a nice wee review. You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at Jampkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
And goodbye.
And goodbye.
Or around the streets of London if you happen to be a dog and like the smell of butts.